Well then, ladies and gentlemen, from the wonderful resort at Great Yarmouth, for the Sci-Fi Weekender 10 Part 2, please give a huge welcome to the amazing and wonderful world of Sam Stone and the Stone Tapes!
Well, hello everybody. I'm Sam Stone, and joining us today on the stage, and not in the studio for a change, is David J. Howe.
Hi, I'm the one that interrupts all the time.
Alex Lefchuk.
Good afternoon.
Robin Pierce.
Robin Pierce, not on the phone for a change.
And Eloise Sheehan.
Yeah, hello.
Really? That's it?
That's all we're getting.
Take two.
Now, the Stone Tapes, we do have a format, and so today, what we're going to be talking about is, what are we
it's
talking
about?
It's
been a long day, hasn't it?
It's been a long day.
Very long day, a long weekend.
You know, you can tell it's actually catching up on me now.
In terms of the schedule, because regular Stone Tapes listeners will know, this is the point when normally music kicks in, and we have 2 or 3 minutes to say, what are we going to do on the show today?
We don't really wing it, though. We don't make it up as we're going along.
I think the key thing that we're looking for is maybe moving straight to our Welsh correspondent.
Absolutely.
With the amazing world.
Actually here.
Yes. The view from Robin's Castle.
I had a feeling that you'd try and drop me in it and throw me under a bus. Not this, you know, early into the show, but from my previous dealings with you, I knew that this would be inevitable. So the view from Robin's Castle at the moment is of Great Yarmouth, not Wales. As far as I'm aware, Great Yarmouth doesn't even have a castle. Do you guys have castles here?
Is there a castle here? Anybody live here? No? Or no? You've got a pier? Is there a pier here?
Do we have any locals here at the moment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The two-peered lady in the back.
Ah, right. Can you answer a question? Great Yarmouth, what's great?
It's got a lot of history.
It's got a lot of history.
Yes.
I think we might have to wait, Robin, before we actually introduce the audience fully to respond on that.
Otherwise, yeah, okay. I have some time to think about it. I mean, everywhere's got history.
Robin.
Even I've got history, but I'm not going to go into that.
What do you want to talk about on this live edition?
Let it go, Robin.
Let it go. Let it go.
So
well, I haven't seen Frozen 2 yet.
So we have a special guest.
Yes, our special guest is arrived.
Hello. And for the listener at home,
I didn't bring a note either. Sorry.
We're just joined by Miss Sophie
what
Aldred.
Do you like at Blackheath, Sophie, back in the day?
What a Hollywood entrance, though.
Well, funnily enough, I've just met an old friend from Blackheath High over there, and
cool.
It's been amazing. We haven't seen each other since school days, so it's fantastic. And no, it wasn't quite like that, but it was quite strict, yes. You did have to turn up on time.
So maybe, Robin, I'm just suggesting you can actually have a reprieve here, and Sam might like to chat with Sophie about how she's found her first experience at Great Yarmouth Sci-Fi Weekender.
Absolutely.
Sophie!
Yes,
so,
Sam!
Hello! We haven't sat on the stage together at all
all
weekend, actually. And I must say you've been an absolute delight to have and to host at the show, and we love you dearly.
Thank you.
And what was it like for you, the whole experience of Great Yarmouth, our new venue?
Well, of course, I have done the Wales one, so I did have an inkling of what it was like. I think it's fantastic. What it does so well, the venue, the whole experience. It's an experience.
Yes, it
isn't
is.
You know,
yeah.
it's not like you're standing in loads of queues all day. You get loads of entertainment, and for us, it's great because we're kind of like exploring the place too, and you know, it's very unusual. We're in the caravans, and yeah, it's a very different experience, and I think it bridges a gap as well for people who don't just want to go and queue up and get autographs, but they want to go and be entertained. Absolutely.
I definitely endorse the line about the interesting caravans, having spent a combined total of something like 1 hour, 34 minutes over the last sort of few days looking for the caravan, but Eloise will tell you more about that.
I mean, yes, exactly what you just said, though, Sophie. This is not like any other experience you've ever had, and it isn't a Comic-Con. We try to avoid queues, and obviously we try to make the experience for guests as positive and as we can make it, you know, so I'm really glad you've had a good time.
It's fantastic. I have to say as well that you've given me the biggest laugh of the entire weekend today without even knowing it, Sophie, because you were the instigator of Banana Gate.
Yeah, do you know about Banana Gate?
Do you know about Banana Gate, Sophie?
I can guess. I imagine Eloise.
So how did this start, Eloise?
Well, Sophie requested a banana, but we didn't know where to get one, so we had to try and find someone with a banana. And then we ended up with their caravan keys and couldn't find them, so David had to look after said
banana. So what ended up happening was that we managed to source a banana for Sophie. If it had been a pineapple, it would have been a bit easier, wouldn't it? But no, we had to find a banana for Sophie. We won't ask why or under what circumstances you needed a banana, but that's cool. And the upshot of all of this was that I had to give a completely stranger to me lady her cabin key back in front of Sam.
And actually, the funny thing was, he was worried about it, but I already knew about it, because she said, here's my keys. I was stood there when it happened, and she went off to get your...
I didn't know this, and I was like, how am I going to explain to Sam why I've got another lady's caravan key in my pocket?
I think next time I'm going to just have to ask for a flamboyant potato.
I think, that's the answer. Anyway, Banana Gate all happened this morning. If you were there, it was great. If you didn't, you missed it. So there you go. Fantastic, fantastic.
So, Robin, you've spoken to Sophie at length this weekend.
I have indeed, yes.
So what was one of the highlights of your interview with her this week?
I enjoyed very much talking about Doctor Who, and I took full advantage of Sophie. Oh, my goodness. Oh, dear. To talk at length about the Remembrance of the Daleks episode. Because... as I mentioned then in front of that panel, it was something kind of controversial. Don't worry, it's child-friendly. Sit down, David.
Okay.
David might bristle at this because he's the Doctor Who expert. And is there anybody armed in the audience? Any Doctor Who fans in the audience? Okay, I'm going to go ahead anyway. I know where the door is. There's a lot of talk these days about female empowerment with a female doctor. I call rubbish, okay? Not on female empowerment, I hasten to add, but that it started with a female doctor. In my opinion, female empowerment in Doctor Who really started in 1986 with a lady sitting to my right.
This is true.
When else did we ever see a companion able to fend for herself fully against the Daleks without the doctor's help? She was cornered. What did she do? She actually took a baseball bat and beat a Dalek to death. That, in my mind, is female empowerment. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think you're right. I think I'm going to agree with you on that.
Any comments?
It's so funny, isn't it? Because when I got the part, I thought to myself, Doctor Who girl, well, they just scream, don't they? And they wear... unsuitable shoes for running around quarries, and they twist their ankles, and they're generally a bit hopeless. And I thought, why have I been cast? Because, you know, I was a tomboy growing up. I learnt to play football and cricket in the days before girls did that. In fact, I found out recently that the Football Association didn't allow girls to play football in the 1970s in their own in teams and things like that. Can you imagine? I mean,
I can't even imagine.
It's Andaluvian, isn't it?
Yeah.
You were better at it.
Possibly. But and I wasn't sort of card carrying, you know, oh, women are better. I don't hold with that. I think that, you know, I want empowerment for everyone. There are many men who don't feel empowered. There are many, you know, people in general who do not feel empowered. But of course, for me, in that era, it was an extraordinarily different character on TV. There wasn't really anyone like Ace, was there? But I don't think I really realised that. And I was talking to Sylvester about this yesterday. We just did it. We got on with, like with any other job, I read the script, I take the character from the script and, you know, do what do what I can with it.
And actually, you and I are similar age, and I absolutely loved your character at the time, because for me, it was doing exactly that. I was like, yeah, she's great, or get a grenade out of her bag. That's brilliant. In fact, that was ace. It was. And at that time, that's the kind of language we used.
Yes, so it was, wasn't it? Everyone was saying ace and wicked. And it was funny, though, because Andrew Cartmell, the script editor, was always in search of words that, that young people were using in those days. And, of course, we couldn't use any swear words. So we were always looking around for expressions that people had that would be... I mean, you know, sick wasn't even a thing by then.
No, it wasn't.
It was, wicked was the one, wasn't it? And ace.
Yeah, and fab.
Yes. And it's funny how Jodie Whittaker says ace as herself a lot as well, I've noticed.
Yeah.
You know, she's always saying ace. Because I guess she must have been... Well, no, she's very young, isn't she? I think she's about 20 years younger than me, but...
It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny.
Well, as a doctor, she's 2,000 odd years old, isn't she?
Absolutely, yes.
She's wearing well.
Well, can I ask you about your book? Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, of course you can.
Because we've discovered over the last few days, I think Amazon leaked it, as is their one. Other large retail stores of books are available, as I always have to say. And that you've got a book coming out.
Yes, it was. It's been an extraordinary sort of last 6 months or so for me. Because first of all, there was the trailer for the Blu-ray set, which is coming out this month, and then
it was businesswoman ace.
Yes,
kind of.
Exactly. Yes, the head of a charitable earth, and I was just so delighted with that. It was very moving, the script, I found, and it was really lovely to do that. And then lo and behold. Steve Cole called me, who BBC Books Steve Cole, who kind of, he masterminded the whole of the short trips for Doctor Who. And he said, can I have a meeting with you, please, and Mike Tucker, about an idea that Penguin have had. And we got together. We live reasonably near each other, so we kind of got together in a very nice little coffee shop in Wendover. And he said that the Tom Baker book, Scratch Man, had been an enormous success. It was an idea that Tom had had in the 70s when he was doing Doctor Who, and it had never got made. But Penguin commissioned him to do this book. And it was such a success that Penguin said, okay, we're going to do another one, and we want to do Ace, because she's such a... kind of an important and kind of
iconic.
Pivotal. Iconic. Yeah, iconic. That's the word. Yes. Thank you. And so I was absolutely blown away. It was really fantastic. And Steve and Mike had come up with an idea. And then I added, because the trailer hadn't come out, obviously. And I said, well, funny you should say this. And I told them about the trailer and about the ideas that we'd had for Ace with this building that she's, you know, office building that she's had built opposite the Tower of London, which is where UNIT are meant to be now, so she can kind of keep an eye on what's going in and out of UNIT. And I gave them various ideas that Pete and I had talked about as well. And so then we've all collaborated really on this novel, and it's turned into 230 something pages of story, and it's very much about Ace at the beginning, and then there's a moment where she meets the 13th Doctor, and in fact we're still working on that, because I think that that's got to be the kind of, in a way, one of the most important moments in the book, because that's
Definitely.
What everybody's been waiting for, you know. And so we're still working on that. And then, but it's been a, you know, it's been a short deadline. And it's been a busy time. But I sent some edits in yesterday, and You know, so it's still, but I'm doing the audio book at the end of the month. So we've got to get a move on. And then it's going to, the novel is going to be released in February to coincide with around, the new series. And, I think I'm going to be doing some signings with Jodie and the team, which
would
be
so cool.
Amazing for me, because I love her to bits. I think she's, Not only do I think that she's a fabulous doctor for a new generation of Doctor Who, but I also just love her as a person. I don't know if you've seen the new Children in Need thing she's just done. If you get a chance, look on YouTube. But you can just tell she's the most lovely, lovely person.
Well, I was going to ask you a question, actually, Sophie. How did you find the writing process? Because this is a new thing for you, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not, because I wrote this book called, you know, Ace, The Making of the End of an Era, many years ago with Mike Tucker. And I always used to write a lot of stories when I was younger. So actually for me, the writing process collaboratively, it's been so much easier. It's been really easy for me, actually. I mean, I take my hat off to you, Sam, and to, you know, all the other writers who are here, because I don't know whether I couldn't have come up with it on my own, to be perfectly honest. It's a huge process and a huge sort of undertaking. And it's something that I'm not that interested in, because it's not my passion. But I think, you know, to collaborate on something has been really wonderful to do that.
Sophie, William Shatner has written many, many books as a collaborator and still continues to do so. So it's the start of many, no doubt.
Oh, good. Well, that would be nice. Yeah.
I'm really interested in the fact that you have written stories and that you enjoyed writing stories, because that's something I didn't know about you. And I think everybody here has probably just learned something lovely about you as well.
I can't believe that Alex just likened Sophie to William Shatner. I'm still reeling from that one.
It's the hair.
Is it? Is it real? Or is it Memorex?
So, obviously, the whole experience of being published by... your publisher was Penguin.
Yes, it's Penguin Random House, yeah.
Yes. And how have you found that, being edited?
Oh, they are so generous and so lovely. And in fact, it's Steve who's really... has been given carte blanche by them.
Oh, that's great.
That's great. We've got this amazing guy called Albert DePetrillo, I think his name is. He's American. He's... lovely, lovely guy. And the team there are just fantastic. Really lovely, yeah. We went for a great meeting with them a little while ago. And they couldn't do enough for you. You know, they're a really, really great team. Yeah.
Fantastic, thank you.
You might have just heard David's talking thigh there, actually.
Yes,
it's a
wonderful
piece of technology that he actually has.
But never mind the team. What are the lunches like?
Not as good as Big Finish.
Ah, they're legendary, aren't they?
They are legendary lunches, yes. Yes, the guy who does the sound engineering for Big Finish. We used to get curly sandwiches or pop over to the pub when we were in Brixton. And then when he moved to Westbourne Park, he said, "Oh, I do a bit of cookery." What we didn't realise is that it's his hobby and he loves it. And he comes up with these dishes that he makes in, I swear it must be the TARDIS. It's a tiny room and he makes a lot of it at home, but he brings it in, and then about 10 minutes, 15 minutes before lunch, everybody's tummies are beginning to rumble and think, oh, it's coming. And he goes, "I'm just going to pop out for a bit." And you go, "Yes, I know what's coming now." And he goes out, and then you come, and he's done a 3-course meal out there, which you all queue up and you get your plate and you get your soup, and then you go back and you get your main course. And
we could discuss lunches all the show, couldn't we, really?
It's incredible. It's making me hungry now, actually.
What's your favourite lunch, Eloise?
I will eat anything as long as it's food, so...
Just food. Just food. That's fantastic.
Very sensible.
Robin?
My favourite food, steak or lasagna.
Oh.
See, not the same plate at the same time.
I'm a big lasagna guy.
See, I don't want another heart attack.
Nor me.
I'm thinking bananas and pineapples. Clearly. Has to be.
It's fantastic.
Fantastic. So have you watched Doctor Who particularly, Louise?
Yes, David. I've got tattoos dedicated to Doctor Who.
I've
really
not
do
seen,
like Doctor
I've not seen your tattoos, strangely.
Radio, David.
Oddly that.
It's the Key story all over again.
It is. It must be. It must be the Key story. So what's your favourite Doctor Who era, considering who you're sitting next to? Think about that very carefully before you answer.
I feel pressured now.
You are.
I'm too young. Yeah, am I? I have seen most of them, the ones that I can get hold of. I very much like Paul McGann, though, and Peter Capaldi. They're my two favourites.
Okay, that's fantastic.
And
have you seen Jodie?
Jodie, I watched it. I'm on the edge. I love her, but the writing I feel could be improved.
Just a bit of a backtrack. Who doesn't like Paul McGann?
That is.
Yes. Oh yes.
Sorry, I'm speaking quite a lot. Okay, so when Paul McGann was in The Monocled Mutineer, which was about 1986, I was living in a sort of housing association, bit of a grotty flat in Lewisham in southeast London, and we had a sort of rubbish telly in the corner. And I remember just switching it on one night and sitting down and watching an episode of The Monocled Mutineer and just looking at the screen and going, oh, my God, what a beautiful man.
It sounds like Eloise all over again.
And I'll probably never, ever meet him. And I got getting quite tearful about, I think I'm in love, but it's just, it's impossible, it's hopeless. Anyway, fast forward to last year in the Isle of Wight, and I'm doing Paul McGann's Mythmakers for Keith Barnfather, Real Time Pictures. And Paul and I I'm interviewing him and asking him stuff. And he was a very good friend of, well, Sylvester was a good friend of the McGann boys when they were growing up, when they were kids. And I said to Paul, so did you watch any of Sylvester's stories? And, he said, yeah, of course I did. And he said, I'll tell you something funny. He said, I was watching Sylvester's as the doctor, and he said, I remember turning to my brother and going, do you think she's married? And it was so bizarre. So then I told him the story, and this must have been 87, like a year later. And so it was so bizarre. Because, you know, it really...
If you'd have both really met weird. At that time, things might have been very different.
Thank God we didn't, really. Because I married another Scouser instead, who's just as gorgeous. And they get on really well, funnily enough. I remember we were in New Zealand doing a convention together. And I'd taken Vince and the boys. And Vince and Paul and Sylvester went out one night. And Sylvester... They basically kind of carried him home, and that cemented their friendship. They're also fans of Liverpool, so and Paul very kindly gave Vince and my eldest son one of his season tickets for a game earlier this year. So, yeah, we like that.
I was just thinking that's probably the most interesting view from Rowan's Castle we've had in 54 volumes of the Stone
Tapes.
A round of applause for Sophie Aldred and the view from Rowan's Castle.
Thank you for rescuing me.
So, I'm going to ask the panel a question, you too, Sophie, because, I mean, obviously you've played a lot of characters throughout your career, but what's the ideal role? What is the one character that you'd really love to play? And I'm going to ask all of you this. Ooh. So, think about it for a minute.
David?
I think... Thinking about it, because in fact we were talking about this the other day as we drove to this very place. If I was an actor, I think there's a number of roles which actors love or would love to get their teeth into and to play. I think usually it's the bad guy because they're usually far more interesting than the good guy, who can be a little bit perhaps one-dimensional, and they're good, you know, they're good. But we were talking about, and I was considering, we were talking about Dracula films with Dacre driving in here, and we were discussing Dracula and the different versions of Dracula and what we liked and what we didn't like and stuff like that. And I think if I was an actor, I think the part of Renfield would be the most fascinating to take and twist and try and put some sort of an original, different interpretation on.
Which version?
No, I'm not talking about any particular version.
Just the character.
Just
of
the character of Renfield.
So you're not going to be Dwight Frye.
Because that character has so much depth, so much pain, so much kind of untold backstory that you don't really understand. And we were discussing the two, I think, iconic portrayals of Renfield is Dwight Frye in the original Universal Dracula, which is utterly fantastic and compelling. And the other one that I absolutely adore is Jack Shepherd in the 1977 BBC Count Dracula series. And I think those two portrayals are incredibly different from each other, but I think as an actor, to be able to play a role like that, I would go for that rather than Dracula himself almost. I would rather play something that I could really draw on, pull out, do something extraordinary with that just lit the screen up. So that would kind of be, for me, that kind of one.
That does surprise me a bit, David, because I think everybody here knows you're like the Doctor Who historian, and you would automatically think David would want to be Doctor Who. But actually, no, you wouldn't, would you? That's great. I like that. I like that. Alex, what about you?
Well, I was actually thinking, as David was talking there, about, yeah, interesting character parts, and what better than the kind of manifestation of Agent X-20 in Stingray, a la Peter Lorre, doing Shakespeare. We are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with us. His rackets and his pains we thank you for. When we have matched our rackets to these balls, we shall in France, by God's grace, play a set, shall strike his father's crown into the hazard.
You're
Mighty
hired.
Titan.
You're hired. We'll have you. That's brilliant.
Well, yeah, I'm working on it. I'm working. It's a work in progress. It's organic, you know.
You didn't expect me to ask you that question either, so well done. Robin.
Wow. I think I'd like to play Han Solo, because then I could actually get paid to be cocky, arrogant, overconfident. All three things that I'm really not in real life. Why are you laughing? But I'd end up playing something like Greedo.
Going somewhere solo.
I'm stuck between Greedo and Renfield. Help!
Sophie? Well, apart from Ace now, in a spin-off series, which I would love to do, I think nowadays... When I was about 11, I was taken to see a production of Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward in the Fairfield Halls in Croydon. And in that play is a wonderful character called Madame Arcati. And she's a sort of mad medium. And I went and wrote it all down. I didn't realise you got play scripts. And then I made my friends do it at school. And we did it. We put in for the drama prize at school, and it's a wonderful character. Is there anybody there? One knock for yes, two knocks for no. And recently I saw that there was a production with Angela Lansbury in the West End, and I'd forgotten this, and I thought, my whole career hasn't even started yet. So I'm waiting to play mad old bags in stuff.
I love it.
I can't think of anything better.
It's very freeing.
Yeah, exactly.
It is.
The new choice, Grenfell.
Yes.
Well, number one, I cannot act to save my life.
Well, nor can I. It doesn't stop me.
That is true. But if I could, I'd like to do something on Broadway, something about live shows.
Yeah.
And... especially about Jersey Boys. I really love Jersey Boys and the story of Frankie Valli. So playing like Mary Delgado or something like that, something true life, I think would be really, really fun.
Amazing.
Well,
what about you,
Sam? Myself, I'm actually in Eloise's camp there because I love musicals. A few of you may have been here when we did the sing-along for Buffy a few years ago in Pwllheli. But I love to sing, so I've always wanted to play Norma Desmond. I'm not old enough yet, I hope. But I think it's brilliant, the whole tragedy of the character. The aging star, that, you know, black and white star, and then she's suddenly too old to do the roles. And also, I absolutely love the music for that show. So, With One Look is one of the most beautiful songs. And As If We Never Said Goodbye, if it's sung right, can be or your whole audience in tears. It's devastating. So, in a good way. And, I've always wanted to play her. I have.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. I'm suddenly just thinking to myself, Sophie, you know, had you ever considered you and Bonnie Langford remaking Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
That would be fun. Wow. What a great idea. Yeah,
I like it.
But which sister would you play?
Good question.
Would you be serving the rat, or would you be served rat?
Golly, I don't know. I think, well, it'd be good to do it one way round and then do it the other way round. Yeah.
So basically, with today's technology, you could play twins.
Yeah.
That would be brilliant.
Oh, that would be good.
You could actually have an interactive...
Can you do wild-eyed crazy, though?
Oh, no, I couldn't possibly do that.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry.
You could actually have an interactive Blu-ray where you could select which actress you want to be.
Great idea.
So, Alex, I'm going to throw things over to you a little bit now.
Are you?
Yeah, because I want to talk to you about conventions. You do an awful lot of conventions.
Well, when you say do conventions, let's just qualify
that
this.
That does say do, yeah.
And I don't do cosplay.
No.
I occasionally do reportage. I introduce my students to the wonderful world of what we actually do here and so on.
Absolutely. You usually go in a press capacity.
Yes, David,
he's very good, isn't he?
He is very good.
I love his costume.
So, what is so different about Sci-Fi Weekender compared to other events you've been to?
Well, I think actually this is just my second Sci-Fi Weekender, and the last one obviously was Sheffield, so I have never had...
And that really wasn't... It wasn't how we really do it, which is this weekend.
Well, it's as Sophie referred to, the Welsh experience, which again... is a world which probably will never sort of be back. Or who knows, it may be. But from what I've been able to ascertain and what I've actually experienced over this weekend, I think the family atmosphere, the congeniality, the fact that actually, although, yes, there are a lot of eccentric fine folk out there, but there's a lot of creative genius out there as well. And I think, actually, I'd like to invite everybody to actually give a round of applause for all that creativity that is present at Sci-Fi Weekender. Yes, that includes the audience.
There is an audience. There really is one.
There is somebody there, Madame Arcati.
So, experiences. I'm going to ask all of you this now. I've already asked our lovely Ace here what her experience has been like for this weekend. But Eloise, what about you?
I really enjoyed it this weekend. I've mixed with doing loads of different things with Alex and yourself, and so I found it really good and an improvement every time I come to these. So thank you for letting me come.
You're welcome. What about
can
you?
Can I just say something about Eloise? What you don't know about Eloise is that she's a shapeshifter or something, or she's kind of like she's got some magic skill. Because every time I've wanted anything, or you know, sort of like somebody else has wanted anything this weekend, I've thought to myself, oh gosh, I couldn't half do with a banana. Or I'd really like a bottle of water. And boom, there's Eloise. Can I get you anything? It's amazing. She's been brilliant.
Which is why Eloise has been invited to do guest liaison with us next year.
Perfect. Good.
Robin, experiences of the weekend. What's been a highlight?
The highlight for me actually happened today, and it was completely off the cuff. I did the premiere of The Ascent with Tom Payton this morning, and we did an audience Q&A afterwards, and we were on the stage, we're on the main stage, and they turned the lights on, and I couldn't see a thing. Not only could I not see the front row, I couldn't even see the end of the stage, that sort of walkway out into the audience.
So you had to remain where you were, just in case.
Well, I walked out, and I sort of
jokingly said, you know, somebody let me know when I'm reaching the end of the stage, otherwise, you know, we crowd surf. And anyway, I got to the end, and I looked around, and I just complete blindness. And I'm a big Star Trek fan. So I looked at the lights and said, this is like being tortured by the Cardassians. People laughed, and we went on with this.
Little did you think, of course.
Little did I think, right? About an hour later, Alex had me go around with him doing some off-the-cuff interviews with people, and I didn't know that David Warner, who had played the Cardassian in that Star Trek episode, Star Trek Next Generation, was still here, and we approached him, and the first thing he did was look at me and said, there are four lights. That made my weekend. Absolutely made my weekend. The second thing I did this morning, I happened to bump into Sylvester McCoy. And, you know, said hello to him, and we had a very brief, you know, chat. And I mentioned how much I liked his work, not only on Doctor Who, but on Lord of the Rings. And he actually did the Lord of the Rings voice.
Oh, wow.
There was just him and me there. I thought, oh, wow. Oh, wow. This kind of cool stuff just doesn't happen to other people.
Download the podcast for the Four Lights one. It will be there.
I could have it forever.
Well, at this time in our show, we usually talk about a film. So, David, what is your... Well, you want to talk about your experience?
Because I've got a little experience, which is perhaps not something that you wouldn't expect. But one thing that stood out for me yesterday was one of our author guests had put his satchel bag down on the floor while he took some photographs. And when he turned round, the bag was gone. And he searched all around, and he couldn't find it. It wasn't there. He checked the stall holder. Nope. Haven't got the bag, not there. We checked backstage. No, he came and found me and said, oh, it's got my laptop in it. It's got my phone in it. It's all my stuff.
Did it have a banana in it?
Didn't have a banana in it because that had already been stolen. We're still hunting for the banana, and Sophie's going to be searched as she leaves, just in case she's smuggling. So we went out to the little cafe. No, they hadn't seen it. So I said to the guy, I said, look, mate, it might have been handed in at reception. Go to reception. Ask them if they haven't got it, come back, see me, and I'll try and get an announcement made on stage. And all the while, my brain's going, not at SFW, not at SFW. 10 minutes later, he came back, he said, I've got it. It was handed in at reception. It had been found and handed in. And I was like, yes!
And that's not the first time that sort of thing's happened, because... generally speaking, what an honest bunch.
Exactly, and I thought, no, that doesn't have... We don't have bags of laptops stolen at this event. That's not us, that's not our way. I was so pleased that I was proved right. Anyway, so that was a little
thing. That's a great experience, David. And I'll end
you
with...
Time for film of the month.
It is film of the month. It is, before my experience. Obviously, big thing, meeting Gil Gerard. He's ever so sweet.
Did he dropkick you?
He hasn't drop-kicked me, thank God. But I did get a hug, and that was followed by a great deal of blushing on my cheeks. Well, Buck Rogers. And it is now time for David's Film of the Month.
David's Film of the Month. So this is where we reveal everything, because on the radio it sounds like I know all this stuff, but actually I've got it all written down. So what we decided to choose as our Film of the Month this month is... it's an interesting film. I'd wanted to see this film again for years and years and years and years and years, but I could never find it. We happened to be talking to somebody, I don't know who it was, about a week ago, and the next thing I know, it arrives in the post the next day because Sam had gone and found it online and ordered it. It's a film called Ghost Story. And Ghost Story, you haven't given me the date here, darling, and give me all the information. It's early 80s?
Early 80s, about 83, I think.
83. It's an 83 film. It's based on a novel by Peter Straub called Ghost Story. And the cast list is quite extraordinary. We've got Fred Astaire, Douglas Fairbanks Jr. We've got Patricia Neal, Alice Krieg. So it's kind of got pretty good Melvin Douglas... pretty good cast list going on. And the essence of the film is it's a ghost story. It's called Ghost Story, and it's a ghost story. And it's got a lot of parallels with Stephen King's It, I felt. I think the books came out at fairly similar times as well. I think they were fairly similar. The idea of Ghost Story is that, obviously, Fred Astaire, all these people are old guys. So they're old guys who are still living in a town, but they're being kind of haunted by this horrific apparition of a ghost, which kind of comes after them, and they end up dying kind of one by one. And then we get a flashback to their kind of teenage years, and we discover that this ghost is this character played by Alice Krieg, who one of them fell in love with, but she just kind of wasn't interested. And then she gets raped, is it?
No. Basically, that isn't what happens.
We did.
No, most of that's right. But what happens is she starts to have an affair, or wants to have an affair with one of them, and the other three men get very jealous. And there's a moment of, well, what about our kisses? What about our hugs? And that she gets very cross with them, and it ends up falling and hitting her head, and they think she's dead.
Yeah,
there you go, Dave.
That's right. They think she's dead. So they basically decide to kind of destroy, get rid of all the evidence, so they tumble her body into the back of the car and push the car into the local lake. But as the car sinks below the surface, they see her pop up and bang on the back window as it goes down. And there's nothing they can do. And so effectively what's happening is they've now been haunted their entire lives by the ghost of Alice Krieg as this wet, decaying, destroyed kind of monster in incredible makeup by Rick Baker, one of the masters. And what's the other guy? Albert Whitlock, I think, worked on it as well.
Special effects.
So amazing special effects. But the film is complex in that it sort of jumps forwards and backwards in time. You get different flashes of this and that and the other. But I actually found it really rewarding because it's better than a normal horror film.
It's an intelligent horror
film. It's very intelligent, and it rewards a kind of a watch, and it is horrifying. And in a way, not really fair, because these lads hadn't really done anything. It was an accident. They thought she was dead.
Well, the stupid thing they did was try to cover that up. But, of course, this is what young people do sometimes. They make mistakes. And so, we all look at that as adults and go, well, we would never do that. But who knows in that situation if you wanted to cover it up. So, Eloise, I know you saw it. I'd love to hear what your view of this is, being the youngest person on the panel here.
I really liked it, but personally, Fred Astaire, if he's in it, I will watch it. He was one of a kind, and this is something he wouldn't have normally done, so watching him in a horror film is quite interesting. But the film itself, it doesn't give anything away, like most horror films, especially now. You can see what's coming, you just understand what the end of the plot is going to be, but it doesn't give anything away until the last second, and I think it's really interesting the way it does that.
Have you seen it recently, Rob?
I've seen it, but not recently. I saw it about 30 years ago, and it reminded me, because of its dark tone, I mean, there's a lot of darkness in it. I don't mean sort of story darkness. I mean, it's lit well, very subtly lit. And it reminded me a lot, as I recall, of the BBC Christmas ghost story kind of dramas. Mm. And it's one that I need to get for my collection, because this is really, if you'll forgive the pun, wet my appetite.
And it is a horrific wet monster ghost thing, isn't it? I tell you. Anyone in the audience seen it? Any hands going up there? Are we talking about a film you've never seen? Good Lord, that must be a first.
We do this a lot.
Check it out. We do this a lot. That's why we do a film of the month on the Stone Tapes. And so that's our film of the month, Ghost Story.
Yeah, I do remember it a long time ago. I haven't actually seen it recently, and I think it does resonate. It's a bit of a slow burner, though. I can appreciate that if you're suffering from insomnia, don't watch it, because you'll probably nod off. But other than that, yeah, thumbs up.
And I think that's all we've got time for.
You know, it is, but we do have to thank the technical team at the Great Yarmouth site here, obviously, for Vauxhall, and coordinator for the production, my successor this time, really, replacement Ryan Jones.
Yes, thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you, Ryan.
And also to our wonderful panel here, first and foremost, the gorgeous Sophie Aldred.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much.
Bananas with pajamas, Sophie?
Bananas with pajamas. Eloise Sheehan.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Robin Pierce.
Thanks, guys.
David J. Howe.
Oh, that's me. Hello. Thank you.
And I'm Sam Stone, also known as Samantha Lee Howe. Now you all know that this weekend. And thanks so much for joining us on the Stovetapes Live.
Thank you.